I'm the operator with my pocket calculator.
Welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community here on WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is Ernie Hood. I am a freelance science writer, and each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science here in the Triangle area, one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research and development. You can email us at radioinvivo@earthlink.net, and you can access a full archive of all of our past programs at radioinvivo.net. Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the National Evolutionary Synthesis Center in Durham. NESENT is a collaborative effort of Duke University, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State University, and is sponsored by the National Science Foundation. NESENT's mission is to facilitate broadly synthetic research to address fundamental questions in evolutionary biology by providing an environment for fertile interactions among scientists. Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research. Since it was founded in 1989, the NCABR has been fulfilling its mission to promote public understanding and support for bioscience research and careers. To learn more about the benefits of bioscience for the future of North Carolina, visit NCABR's homepage, www.ncabr.org, and its clearinghouse of bioscience resources, www.aboutbioscience.org. Radio In Vivo is also underwritten by Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center at UNC Chapel Hill. Moorhead's monthly Current Science Forum series presents expert speakers and lively discussions of today's science headlines. Moorhead Planetarium and Science Center is online at moorheadplanetarium.org. And last but not least, thanks to personal contributions from the faculty, Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the Biomanufacturing Research Institute and Technology Enterprise, or BRITE, at North Carolina Central University. BRITE is one of the newest and most innovative biotechnology educational initiatives in the country and the only formal biotech degree program offered by a North Carolina university. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank this terrific group of underwriters for their support. Well, as you just heard, one of the lines in my standard introduction to Radio In Vivo describes the Triangle area as one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research and development. If that is accurate, as it undoubtedly is, then the jewel in the crown of that scientific endeavor is Research Triangle Park, which is in fact indisputably the leading and the largest high-technology research and science park in North America, and one of the oldest and most successful science parks in the world. The RTP was founded by a committee of government, university, and business leaders as a model for research, innovation, and economic development. By establishing a place where educators, researchers, and businesses come together as collaborative partners, the founders of the park hoped to change the economic composition of the region and state, thereby increasing opportunities for the citizens of North Carolina. And as I think everyone knows, that was a wildly successful idea. Last year, in 2009, the RTP celebrated its 50th anniversary. And today, as it was in 1959, the park is owned and developed by the Research Triangle Foundation of North Carolina, the entity entrusted with continuing to ensure that Research Triangle Park remains a vibrant, indispensable element in North Carolina's economy. We are most fortunate today to welcome to our Radio In Vivo microphones the president and CEO of the Research Triangle Foundation, Rick Weddle. Rick has been the leader of the foundation since 2004. Previously, he led regional economic development organizations in five different states. He has been long active in the International Economic Development Council, or IEDC, and was elected that group's first chairman of the board in 2002, was named an honorary life member in 2007, and in 2009 received the organization's Lifetime Achievement Award for Excellence and Economic Development, and we are certainly lucky to have him here in North Carolina. He also recently completed a 2-year term as president of the North American Division of the International Association of Science Parks, or IASP, which had its first world conference here, or its most recent world conference here, I should say, last summer. And that event focused a great deal of attention on North Carolina and the RTP. Rick probably does more than anyone to contribute to the scientific innovation here in the Triangle that we celebrate here on Radio in Vivo. And it is certainly long overdue that we have him on here to talk about his career and the past, present, and future of Research Triangle Park. Rick, thanks for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Ernie, and I'm glad to be with you.
Rick, just cause so we can get to know you a little bit better before we start exploring the RTP, tell us a little bit more about your background and training and what brought you into this particular field of economic development work.
Well, thank you, Ernie. I've been in this field about 30, 35 years. I'm a native Oklahoman and started in Oklahoma in city management, in my career in city government and city management. And you might say that I got the bug for job creation in that capacity, as economic development was a major portion of my responsibility. Mm-hmm. I spent some time in private business, and then in 1981 was offered the opportunity to join the Tulsa Chamber of Commerce as head of their economic development division. I guess the rest is pretty much history. I came to North Carolina in Winston-Salem and Forsyth County in 1987 to help get a new organization there started to kind of help overcome or move beyond the economic dislocations that occurred with the Reynolds Tobacco move to Atlanta and the loss of Piedmont Airlines and the closing of an AT&T Lexington Road facility. So mm-hmm. my business and my job and my career for the last 30 years has been about the creation of jobs, economic opportunities, payroll opportunities for citizens of our communities, our regions, and our states. In 2004, I had the opportunity, the lifetime opportunity, I think, to come and be a part of the Research Triangle Park, which is probably the most significant opportunity that not only I would have, but any economic developer could possibly imagine having.
It must have been a dream job when it came up.
It was indeed, and it still is, and I hope it will be for some time to come.
Well, that's great. And it's interesting that you were really present for in North Carolina for a lot of the really transitional period, moving away from the traditional sources of our economy to the newer ones, and RTP is certainly a big reflection of that.
That's exactly right. I saw in Winston-Salem and Forsyth County, the Triad, I saw the strength of the great manufacturing, you know, dominance of the state for many, many years. And as that began to transition and the leadership began struggling with what do they do here in RTP, I get to see and harvest the fruits of earlier generations of leaders who saw that same set of challenges and put in place opportunities and programs to overcome that and to manage that transition. Today, a lot of what's good about North Carolina is best manifested by the successes of what's happening with our universities and with RTP.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, as I mentioned in my introduction, you've worked in economic development literally all over the country and in every different region, it seems like, over the course of your career. So taking the kind of broader view, how does North Carolina or the Triangle region itself stack up in your estimation? Are we still kind of, we felt like we were ahead of the game. Are we still there?
Well, if you could bottle what has gone on in the Research Triangle and Research Triangle Park with these three universities, you would have the most successful selling bottled beverage in the world, because it is of great demand. It is mm-hmm. a synergy that is almost unmatched. Now, let me say this, and I feel very strong about this. Our communities and our universities individually are significant in their own right.
Sure.
But there are legions of communities around this world that have good universities and good communities and good opportunities. And that's not what differentiates this region. What differentiates this region is three of the top 100 universities in the United States, in the world, if you will, and maybe the top 50 in the United States, mm-hmm. characterized around a triangular kind of accidental scalene triangle that brings them together. But three of those universities creating tremendous intellectual property, an airport, and a major economic job generator in the form of RTP in the midst of that region.
Mm-hmm.
That puts us just almost without peer as a region, kind of a low-density urbanization model that developed over the years that now has great opportunity to grow. And 25, 30, 40 years from now, the best of this region will still be in the middle.
Sure.
And that's very much of a differentiator, because most regions will end up growing away from their core, and we have an opportunity to grow into the core.
I see. That's an excellent point. I'd never really thought of it that way. Well, to begin our examination of Research Triangle Park itself, Rick, why don't you just kind of give us the basic facts and figures about the park that are pertinent today?
Well, it's large. It's 7,000 acres in development. It's home to more than 170 R&D firms. Currently, we factor about 50,000 workers, 42,000 full-time equivalent, about 10,000 seated contract workers mm-hmm. in the park. Average salary is significantly greater than the state average or the regional average, north of $55,000, $56,000 per year. And in the last 5 to 6 years, average salaries, you know, closer to $75,000 or $80,000 per year, which is great. 22.5 million square feet of developed space. What does that mean? Downtown Charlotte is about 16 million square feet
wow.
of space. So mm-hmm. if we were vertical, we would be about 1.5 times the size and presence of downtown Charlotte. It's been an area of great entrepreneurial activity. Some 1,800 startup companies have been logged since 1970, with an economic impact greater than the park itself, if you look at that. But let me put this in scale, if you will. If you were to lay and superimpose the RTP over Raleigh, our state capital, for example, mm-hmm. the southern end of RTP would be at the Saunders Road exit on 440, and the northern end would be at North Hills.
Goodness.
And so that's a really significant landmass that was assembled and that continues to pay great dividends.
And most of it is or has been in Durham County, correct? There's a little
About three quarters of it is in Durham County,
okay.
And the southern portion is in Wake County.
Mm-hmm. I see. How much developable property remains?
Well, that's a good question. People ask that all the time. Aren't you going to run out of dirt at some point? We have about 600 acres of land that has been that's currently undeveloped that could be made available for greenfield development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're also buying back property. We've bought back about 70 acres in the last 18 months or so. And so we'll continue to buy back surplus property as the opportunities occur.
What is the purpose of that?
Well, so that we can develop and redevelop and never finish, if you will. I like to make the tongue-in-cheek comment, you know, Chicago's been built out for 100 years, but they didn't close.
Right.
You know, they keep building and redeveloping and rebuilding. And we see the opportunities for redevelopment to be greater than you can imagine. Let me give you one just if RTP were to build out at the historical densities without ever changing anything. And we were to sell the rest of the property and get it all, we would accommodate about 90,000 employees. So we could almost double the employment just with the existing densities. We mm-hmm. think that by some creative and careful and thoughtful densification or further concentration in some nodes and niches within the park and redeveloping properties and going vertical in some areas, I think you could see a footprint of 150,000 to 175,000 workers in the RTP proper, which is easily the 30 or 40 more years of work.
That's enough to keep you busy for a while, right. Obviously. I know that there are some initiatives in place to perhaps better develop or better utilize existing properties. The Hamner Institute comes to mind in the project they're working on.
Well, you see a lot of projects in the park that just transform over time. You know, nothing is static. If you drove by the park 10 years ago and developed a mindset, it's wrong because mm-hmm. today it's much different. Hamner,
sure.
for example, is an excellent example. It was originally sponsored by the chemical industry to do toxicology research and research and development on the impacts of chemicals on the human condition. Today it's a major translational biotech Research Institute with the master plan for the development of their campus that will grow dramatically over time as those opportunities globally with major investments from around the world. Right. So Hamler's an excellent example of the transformational qualities of RTP as it continues to change and morph into relevance in the future, as a, not just relevance in the past.
Sure. Well, another good example, Rick, might be Glaxo, because and that's one I've certainly seen firsthand. My company worked with them when they first came to the park, so I was literally there for the first turn the shovel of dirt at their campus, and to see how far that has come over the past 20 plus years is just remarkable.
Yeah, the list of companies that have that started one way and grew both in dramatically in size or even transformed in structure and nature. You know, I guess you started out, if you look at the Glaxo campus, it really includes the original Kimstrand building, which was, and we have to go back in RTP in history and remember, initially it was about chemistry. Initially, it was about chemistry. We remember the old the movie The Graduate, and you know, and they said going to plastics science, going to plastics. Well, initially it was about chemistry because that was what science looked like in 1950 and 1955 and 1960 in that regard. Sure. And who would have thought about biotechnology and biopharma? And you know, the Biotechnology Center was established in North Carolina in 1984. Trust me, nobody in economic development was thinking biotech in 1984. They were, we were still trying to figure out personal computers and things of that sort.
Right.
And so part of the hallmark of RTP has been first mover advantage. Leadership and first mover advantage, getting there first, establishing a beachhead, and growing off of that, whether it was the Micro Computing Center of North Carolina with the first Cray supercomputer in the early 80s, the Biotech Center in 84, you know, the presence of the park from 60 on through, you know, the year 2000 and to the present time. There's a lot of money to be made, jobs to be created, and history to be formed through first mover advantage.
Absolutely. Well, you've kind of touched on the beginning to answer my next question, and that is I wanted you to kind of tell us the genesis story of RTP. Where did this entity come from? How did it arise?
Well, it's been told in many different ways, and it's kind of like the proverbial blind man looking at the elephant. Depends on what part you're touching is how it looks to you. But let me tell you as it has been told to me by some of the folks that were at the scene of that early crime.
Sure.
There was a notion in North Carolina in the post-World War II era that there was, that with these good universities, that the children that would go to school here and graduate would have to move away to Chicago, to New York, to Washington, to Atlanta, to other locations to get good jobs. And so they referred to that as the brain drain. And there was a concerted effort to try to begin to figure out how to deal with that brain drain. The idea was, let's see if we can't recruit or attract or grow companies that would actually have the jobs that are tied to the skills that our children are learning in these universities. It seems kind of simple in its context, although it's really a very complicated process overall. So there was the notion that they needed to bring in industry. The three universities banded together, formed a committee, and were going out in the summer months and calling on companies and trying to recruit industry into the area. It was difficult to do without a place for that industry to locate. And so that led to the discussion of, well, we need a location or an industrial park or something in that regard.
Sure.
The Pinelands Project was a private real estate development that was having difficulty gaining traction in that fashion. And so it became such a sort of a perfect storm, if you will. The assembly of property had already been brought together. The universities were trying to figure out how to attract corporate presence to employ their students. Government was trying to respond to the, you know, the growth needs of the time. and the decision was made from the committee to do to really form this concept and bring it together. Governor Luther Hodges was involved directly, as was Robert Haynes of Wachovia and Winston-Salem and Archie Davis. And the decision was made, well, let's do this as a nonprofit, that we thought they could do it a little bit better as a nonprofit. And over the course of a few months in late 1959, Archie Davis, who worked at Wachovia at the time, went out and raised $1.75 million. Which would be $25 or $30 million in today's money, which would be right. Real money.
Yeah.
And that money was used to do three things initially: to capitalize the foundation, build the first building, the Haynes Building, to extend water and sewer lines from Durham into this property, and then to capitalize RTI International, which was originally just a paper contract research group. Now it's $750 million. Contract, fourth largest research organization, nonprofit research organization in the United States,
and
to prove that research could be done in this park. And then I guess the rest is history. It just started and it grew slowly. I mentioned Kim Strand earlier, one of the early big investments. We know that more by its trade name, AstroTurf. Kim Strand was the inventor, if you will, of AstroTurf. And that was a first major investment. But the park didn't really gain traction until IBM came along in the mid-60s.
Right.
And that
right.
kind of validated the whole thing. And someone said, well, this thing may work then.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest then has been history, as more and more companies have located in the park.
Well, the gentleman who you mentioned and several others, I'm sure, who were involved from the Genesis, they really were true visionaries, weren't they? They had the ability, it seems like, at least looking in retrospect, to envision where this thing could go and how important it could become to the economic well-being of the state.
They did indeed. I sometimes wonder if they really realized how big, how grand a scale, how ambitious, or how ridiculous this idea was. If you think about, you know, here we were in Tobacco Road in the late 50s. Oh, we're going to make this the world's leading, right? One of the world's leading research locations. I mean, that I would imagine there were
dreams.
They would have probably been laughed out of a few polite company gatherings at that point in time.
Sure.
But it was bold. It was significant. And that grand strategy, that ambitious dream that was so beyond what one might normally expect to happen, became a single organizing principle that pulled so much else along with it. When they drove a stake in the ground and said, we are going to build this research park, we are going to attract companies, we are going to grow companies, we're going to collaborate within these universities, I think it helped pull, push, prod, poke, and coax our universities from very good to very great.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
from
so there was a real synergistic.
I think it was completely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to imagine that. And so that became the self-organizing principle. There's one other thing you mentioned: these early leaders. I think there's one of the characteristics that is so difficult to get your head around with RTP, because we like to say that we've been copied frequently but never duplicated. And the reason for that is they copy what they can see.
Yeah.
You can go all around the world and find carbon copies of RTP that haven't had the same results. Well, part of what they can't see is the leadership that has started here. And I call it transgenerational legacy leadership. It's two things. One, leaders that are willing to work on things and start things that they may never live to see finished.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And hand that off to other leaders who are willing to finish work they didn't start. Two characteristics so rare in America today, so rare in the world today, but prevalent in these early leaders as they develop this legacy leadership of kind of being the stewards, if you will, of this grand scheme of creating a place where our children could graduate from these universities and find good, decent, paying jobs, mm-hmm. and raise a family and be part of the North American and the North American and the North Carolina dream.
And stay home where we have such a fantastic quality of life.
Yeah, and so if you think about it, fast forward 5 decades later, we no longer suffer from brain drain. We now have brain gain.
Mm-hmm.
We are a place that is pretty good to have on your resume if you do a stint or a tour of duty in RTP, if you're in the technological field. And now even we're moving into what we call brain circulation. We're in a global workforce that moves in and out and to and from these major centers of technological activity and innovation. So I guess we might say it worked.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, how has the RTP been sold to prospective tenants and owners over the years, and has that process evolved over the 50-plus years?
Well, it has in some ways, and it hasn't in others. It really started early on with the universities documenting their research strengths and going out and talking to companies wherever they could at any point in time and saying, we're PhD granting institutions with specialties in these areas, and we'd like for you to be a part of that. That's still a very, very basic part of the overall sales promotion and sales strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Today it's a little different because we don't have to introduce ourselves as firmly as we did back then.
Sure.
Our brand, we probably are the most globally renowned single real estate project. There are people all around the world that know about RTP that couldn't tell you where North Carolina is.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. and they refer to it as RTP, and they may not know exactly what it is, but they've heard of it and they talk about it. So
sure.
our job is to
It shows up in the scientific literature constantly.
Precisely. And in fact, this was a brand that was largely developed and extended by our competitors trying to emulate us,
mm-hmm.
Kind of brand emulation theory. I mean, duplication is a great flattery in that regard. So in the scientific literature, other states and other governors trying to copy this, trying to do this, and they publish articles and papers showing this is what we're doing. And so the brand was reinforced in that regard. We do a lot of things today differently. Obviously, technological platforms are different. We don't really do what you call direct mail as we once did. We do sales promotions, and we travel to do that, but we do it on a more case-by-case, very targeted. We understand our niche very well, and we don't need to talk to the whole world. We just need to talk to the right people across the world.
There you go.
And we do that. We do a lot of that today through thought leadership around presentation at academic conferences and development conferences where we're invited to give papers and presentations and talk about RTP, because the world still wants to know, how did this crazy bunch of North Carolinians pull together these resources and make such a huge and significant impact on not just our immediate area, but on the industry itself across the world?
Well, we've discussed and mentioned some of the major players in RTP, such as IBM and Glaxo and a few of the others. What have been some of the other major landmarks, Rick, in terms of the significant gets in the park's history? Any particular milestones you'd want to cite?
Well, I think if you review the history of technology development in America, and maybe in the world, but certainly in America, we track our history, and our timeline tracks right along with it. IBM mm-hmm. came in the mid-60s largely to manufacture, to design and manufacture certain, you know, the PC industry and certain aspects of the computer industry as it grew.
Sure.
Today, IBM doesn't manufacture anything in the park. They've transformed themselves into a major global consulting and solution provider in that regard. So our trajectory tracks along that line. We are the only research park in the United States that is broadly diversified across a wide spectrum of industries. You find a lot of parks that are what I call kind of one-trick ponies. I mean, mm-hmm. they're good in biotech or they're good in nanotechnology. You know, we have strength and dominance in information technology, communications technology, the server technology, software, pervasive computing and gaming. At the same time, big pharma, biotechnology, crop science, mm-hmm. material mm-hmm. science, nanotechnology, financial services technology development and utilization, which is one of our newer books of businesses. You know, the financial services industry, one of the biggest users of technology
sure.
and developers in that regard, and data centers. And so is the list. And oh, I would be remiss if I didn't note federal labs.
You know, absolutely.
We're the only location of a National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences lab outside of Bethesda, Maryland.
Right.
And, of course, all the air quality testing mm-hmm. for the Environmental Protection Agency is done here on the federal lab campus. And National Scientific Society, Sigma Xi, the National Fraternity of Scientists and Engineers. We're the only research park with the National Humanities Center in mm-hmm. it, where humanists from around the world come every year to study and be a part of kind of the creative experience. I like to think of it as Walden Pond, but with trees, you know, in that regard. And so it's an extraordinary location for scientific discovery and intellectual capacity development. And so all of those hallmarks come through that process. More recently, we have seen dramatic growth in small companies. So we're riding the innovation trajectory along that way. And I'd be remiss if I didn't note also over that, you know, we are not without acclaim in Pulitzer Prizes and Nobel Prizes and literary prizes and awards, just one after the other, that have come out of this park, just as major, you know, inventions and developments that have changed the world. I mean, the UPC barcode. I mean, we couldn't go to the grocery store without, you know, that was developed here. You know, the AIDS drugs that have moved that HIV from being a death sentence to being a chronic illness in our lifetime developed here. So, I mean, the list goes on.
Cancer things drugs.
That are just and drugs yet to be fully commercialized and discovered. We manage
many
Park Research Center, which is a small incubator that we manage, about 75,000 square feet. When you walk through there and see the 22 or three companies that have gone in there in the last 18 months, and you think, gosh, look at what they're doing. It is here in one of these companies is maybe the next life-saving, life-changing drug discovery that we'll all be reading about 10 years from now. In that regard, it's just a fascinating place. It's a great place to work, a great place to be, and really an asset and a gem for North Carolina.
And the incubation factor that you mentioned, that's kind of a more recent development. It seems like that the universities have really gotten on board with the tech transfer process.
It is, and it really is where much of the future lies for technological development. Big companies also are finding that the return on investment of research is very difficult. They like to acquire startups as opposed to do all the thinking themselves.
Sure.
So we see the park and the immediate area in partnership with the universities becoming a veritable garden, if you will, kind of a garden concept where we grow these small companies. And some will grow into big companies themselves, but many will just grow into products that will be acquired by major companies. And so the co-location of big and small together creates a harvesting opportunity, which creates wealth and which improves the tax base and improves the employment base in the area.
And so RTP kind of provides the fertilizer.
Well, we're trying to be a good home. We view our job as providing real estate solutions for all aspects of technological development, for big, for little, for in between, and for people that live and work in those environments.
Sure. My guest on Radio In Vivo today is Rick Weddle, President and CEO of the Research Triangle Foundation of North Carolina, who are the owners and developers of Research Triangle Park, as you've been hearing. Rick, where do you think we stand today in terms of the park's importance to the economy, both of the Triangle and of North Carolina? Has that picture changed or evolved? Are we in a different place than we were, say, 10 years ago?
Good question. I think we are have always been important ever since we started to develop critical mass, but I think we are more important today than ever before for two reasons. One, just the sheer presence of our economic impact, $3 billion in annual payroll in a time in which payrolls are short, jobs are few.
Sure.
And times are hard. The park remains a very, very stable resource in that. And if it weren't for when I talk about the park, I'm also talking about the immediate environment around it, because somehow the line of demarcation of in or out of the park has meant less over the years as companies look collate around there. So first reason we're important is because we are still creating employment opportunities and creating tax base and creating growth opportunities for the state in a time in which jobs are paramount and important in that regard. Second reason I think we're important, and perhaps maybe the most important, is that we're a living laboratory for what works in economic development and growth on a global scale in the future. America, North Carolina's future will be best supported if we understand how to work at the top of the food chain. You know, there's a third of the world's population that has entered the free market in the last 15 years, and they're willing to work cheaper, and they're smart, and they're gifted, and they're hardworking. And so we're not going to do as well competing at the low end mm-hmm. in low-skilled jobs. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to compete at the top end of the food chain for good-paying jobs, for technological and innovation-based jobs. And RTP is a living laboratory for that. What has worked here can work in other places. We have a great university system across this state with good universities and community after community. We're unique in many states in that capacity. So there are lessons learned that can be replicated across the state and across the country that will be an important part of our economic future overall. We see that as perhaps the most important thing. There's, you know, I say, well, gosh, how do you know that? Well, you know, probably once a week, we have probably 50 visits a year, once a week or so of parks, organizations, universities, governors, et cetera, from around the world, from around the country, looking to figure out what happened here. How did it happen? Mm-hmm. Who did it? Mm-hmm. Can it be done again? What lessons can we learn and take home to help figure out how to reorient our economy? So we're important because we have a critical mass and a large economic footprint. We're important because we're a living laboratory for opportunity going forward.
Now, what about the living laboratory aspect of the science itself that emerges from these many institutions?
Well, I think that's, you know, I guess foolishly we've talked too much about just the real estate development side of it.
No, but
the science is very important. It is. It is maybe the future of humankind lies mm-hmm. in that, and it is extraordinarily important, and often doesn't get the coverage that is deserving in that regard. You know, we're involved in a global health collaborative. You know, we're involved in a number of activities that I would be quick to point out are above my pay grade because I'm not the scientist. I'm the land developer, the economic developer.
Sure.
But we do understand that it's what goes on in those buildings and what goes on in the minds of those students and those professors and those principal investigators that make a great difference in society going forward. And we could be here for another 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 hours still talking about the scientific aspects of this. And we probably should at some point in time.
Absolutely. And there's no doubt about it. And that's, you know, certainly one of the things I try in some small way to do with this program. Mm-hmm. Rick, I mentioned earlier that the RTP celebrated its 50th anniversary in 2009, and that the park hosted the World Conference of the International Association of Science Parks here. You mentioned that there's a constant influx of people coming in to get a look at RTP and see what the secrets for success might be. It seems like the conference of the IASP last year was a prime example of that.
It was a good example. It was an extraordinary example of success. We were fortunate to see the alignment of our 50th anniversary with the opportunity to host that conference. It was a 3-year project mm-hmm. That we worked on, and it was ambitious, to say the least. It was the first time the International Association of Science Parks had ever met in the United States for a full conference. Although we were nervous a little bit with swine flu and the economic downturn, it was like everyone was throwing us a lot of curveballs. It ended up being the largest and best attended world conference of science parks in the history of the association.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And so we had over 800 attendees. We had people from 70 countries or so here, not only to look at the industry of science parks and the academic conference with it, but also to see RTP. I think that speaks to the curiosity that people have for that. So we were really pleased with that. It gave us an opportunity to showcase our new headquarters building that we opened a couple of years ago, which we're really proud of. It involves both our administrative offices, but also what we like to refer to kind of as our town hall, the Archie Davis Conference Center. It's a 6,800 square foot conference facility that enables companies and universities and economic development partners to meet in the park and mm-hmm. and do that. We're really proud that it's LEED Silver certified. So we're trying hard to not only be a park of science and discovery, but also be a park of sustainability and green thinking and green building.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Well, I was certainly going to just about to ask you about the headquarters building, because I've been out there many a time, and it's a very impressive facility. And it seems to me that it provides the park with that focal point that perhaps it had lacked in the past. Where was Research Triangle Foundation prior to the headquarters being built?
We were in the Haynes Building, which we built in. It really sat on the front of what you would think of as the RTI International Campus. We sold that building to RTI. Mm-hmm. We shared that building half and half with RTI International for many, many years, where they didn't have an RTI campus. They were on one end of the building, and the foundation was on the other end of the building in that regard. And it was a wonderful facility for its time, but it lacked meetings. But, to, you know, going back, there wasn't a need to meet. There wasn't any meetings going on back in 1962 or 3 or 4 to that point. Mm-hmm. So it served us very well for many, many years, and as a launching point for our new facility, which we're quite proud to occupy today.
So tell us a little bit more about the function and nature of the Research Triangle Foundation itself, as exemplified by the new headquarters.
Yeah, we are, as you noted, we're the owners, developers of the park, and so we are responsible for marketing, promoting, extending the brand, and selling real estate. Or leasing real estate to companies that are considering locating here, or small companies that are starting up and growing here. We also are the entity that supports and manages the Owners and Tenants Association. All of our companies work together and are members of the Owners and Tenants Association, which the best way to think of it as a large homeowners association. They really regulate the and vote by weighted acreage when there are major issues. They are self-governing. They organize and regulate the restrictions and covenants that govern the uses on the property.
Which have been another key to success.
Which has been a key to success, and it's kind of a self-governance area. Mm-hmm. We also manage the Durham-Wake County Service and Production District, which is a self-taxing district with municipal functions, where the companies agree to tax themselves to provide revenues for public amenities such as our 15 miles of jogging and walking trails, our off-road bicycle trails, our parks and recreation facilities. We have 8 softball fields and a number of amenities in that capacity, not to the least of which also would be right-of-way maintenance and mowing to kind of maintain the park ambiance and character in that. We manage the Triangle University Center for Advanced Studies Incorporated, which is a joint venture between our 3 universities, and we call it TCASI. It manages the TCASI campus, which is the home of the Humanities Center, the Biotech Center, the Burroughs Wellcome Foundation, and a number of other university and affiliated and related activities in that regard. So we are busy about the business of being the shepherds and stewards, if you will, of the RTP promise.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, I wanted to be sure to leave us ample time. The hour is quickly getting away from us, as is usually the case on this program. But I wanted to be sure to leave us ample time to talk about the future of Research Triangle Park, because I know this is an element you've spent a great deal of time on, and that the roles of Research Triangle Foundation and the RTP itself are really changing as the business model and atmosphere evolve. To start out that discussion, tell us a little bit about the new strategic plan formulated in, if my research is correct, 2005, called the Vision 2020 strategy.
Yeah, we took a hard look beginning in 2004 and 2005 at where the park stood with regard to its competitiveness worldwide, and where it needed to go to fulfill the dream in perpetuity. Without question, the park was and continues to be, I mean, we'll always be the oldest. No one can get older.
Right.
we'll always, in the United States, probably be the largest. It's unlikely anyone would eclipse us. We're twice as large as the second largest park in the United States, although something happened along the way to the future. China came along. And China is nothing if not big,
right,
but also fast. And so there are many parks in China now that are larger than RTP and have developed much more quickly because they don't have to vote on things and do things democratically. They can do things by decree in that regard. So our leadership realized that we needed to take a good accounting, if you will, of where we stood and where we needed to go. We went back and reviewed, kind of soup to nuts, the original objects and purposes. What we found is that the original purpose was as true and accurate a purpose today as it was when it started. And it really is around two major areas. One, attracting, developing, growing research and scientific laboratories and other like facilities in the area, and also promoting collaborations between and among the universities and those companies. And so within the context of that original mission, that original purpose, we set a goal that by 2020 to become the world's leading regional center of innovation, technology commercialization, and quality job creation. Some might say, well, aren't we already? but as we all know, this is a moving target.
Sure.
And the world is moving quickly. And so we wanted to drive a stake in ground and say, as good as we are, we need to be better. And with that very broad and ambitious goal to be the world's leading center of regional innovation, technology commercialization, quality job creation, would require us to do some things differently. And to understand that we're not just dirt merchants,
right,
but rather providers of real estate and facility solutions to the changing world of work and technology development. So that meant that maybe it's not just a big campus, but also amenities and collaborative spaces and all sorts of things. And so that has moved forward in a couple of different iterations. The most recent one now, we're beginning to launch a major master plan update. So we're actually taking what we've learned through the Triangle Innovation Project and our strategic plan about the future of science and technology and the future of the places in which science and technology will occur, must occur, and look now and take a long, hard look at how do we need to change or not change RTP's physical environment in order to be able to be the right kind of location to capture the talent, to capture the technology, and to capture the opportunity associated with the next several decades of scientific discovery in that regard. So that's an exciting project. We're just launching it. We'll be running that project over the next 12 to 18 months.
Okay.
And while there may not be, it may be, there'll be change. It may not be sweeping change, but it will certainly be, it might feel like sweeping change based on how long we've been in a very static environment of no change regarding the land development patterns.
Right. Now, what kind of changes do you anticipate might come about?
I think we'll see probably some changes that kind of, and I don't want to prejudge the study, and
sure,
I don't want to second guess those things. I think we will see change that will probably be in nodes and niches. So instead of, as I said, we're a very large place, and so we don't view that any change would be smeared across the landscape like peanut butter on the bread, but rather in nodes and niches, areas around transportation centers and stuff. I think we'll see densification. We'll see maybe taller, more vertical development. We'll see more mixed-use development. We'll see an integration of both vehicular, non-vehicular, and rail transportation facilities that have to be a part of an environment in the future. I think we'll see a different relationship of the RTP proper with its surrounding area. You know, there's been kind of a there hadn't been a moat around us, but there's been a separation, if you will, of what's in the park and what's out of the park.
Sure.
I think that line will blur and gray, and we'll partner and work with surrounding areas to create what we call the center of the region, the core, if you will, a development pattern that really takes advantage of our proximity and makes sure that all the amenities and all the opportunities that need to be there to support science and technology discovery in this region are in place in that regard. So, the future If we were to kind of fast forward and come back 20 or 30 years and look for it, we would find a park that still has large campuses with freestanding companies on them doing cutting-edge research and development. But I think we'll also see a park that has some kinds of new advanced housing amenities, retail amenities, activity centers, recreation centers, collaborative spaces, much more serendipitous meetup opportunities, and a park that articulates exceedingly well with its neighboring amenities and with the university is much more connected. The fabric will be much more connected.
We're already seeing some signs of that happening.
And we're already seeing that, and we're going to see more of it. And then, most importantly, and I don't want to overlook this part, we will be technologically and virtually connected to the world in many ways that we can only begin to imagine right now. The whole Web 2.0, new media virtualization process in that regard. I've often said that in the future, it will be less about where you are located on the planet and more about how you're connected to other locations on the planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, place will matter, sure. maybe even more, but for different reasons.
Right. So, and that's kind of all an aspect of mm-hmm. globalization mm-hmm. in a way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And it is something that we can't run from and we can't hide from. We have to embrace. We can't be isolationist. We have to engage directly and exploit it. You know, if I do my job, we'll continue to have unfair competitive advantage over many, many places. And the beneficiaries of that will be the citizens of North Carolina.
So, Rick, I'm sure you will do your job and continue to do your job in stellar fashion, and that success will in fact continue. But, you know, what keeps you awake at night? What are the areas of vulnerability going forward?
Well, I think the thing that the world is moving very, very rapidly. Mm-hmm. So the pace of change, and how do you keep up with that? How do you manage to change in response at a sufficient speed and scale to maintain viable? That's always a worry. Sure. The other thing that I worry about, and I have to be careful, I don't want to be impolite or indelicate, but sometimes when you're at the front of the parade, you lose sight of what's coming up behind you. And so it's easy to become complacent and easy to filter, if you will, data that doesn't reinforce your notion of how good you are. And we have so we want to be appropriately proud of our accomplishments and celebrate the good things, but we've got to be very careful. There are hungry, hungry competitors behind us that are coming quickly, and we must always play scared. It was Andy Grove, the co-founder of Intel, that said, only the paranoid survive.
Right.
So we have to be very, very guarded against ever becoming complacent, against ever thinking that we have arrived or ever thinking that our work is done.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
just so much more to do, and we've got to stay on top of that. We've got to move quickly, move intensely, and never think that we can rest, or we will be eclipsed by a hungry competitor somewhere in the world.
And no doubt about that. How is the support surviving for the park? From state government, from the counties, the municipalities, are your efforts being adequately funded these days?
Well, I think it's important note that, first of all, we have extraordinary support everywhere we go. I mean, the park is something that, we argue about a lot of things in this triangle. We don't argue about RTP.
That's true.
You know, we argue about a lot of things, and I'm in the midst of some of those arguments. We can argue about transit, we can argue about traffic, but we don't argue about, but the grand scheme, if you will, of making a place help that is transformational is not something that we argue about. So we have very broad, very deep, very significant support when it's needed from state, from county, from local government, and from the federal government, I might add.
Sure.
I would also say, just point out, we've been self-sufficient since 1959. We don't really receive government revenues. This is that's part of the key to success, that the foundation has been a self-sustaining, self-sufficient activity. So Maybe that's why we get so much support, because we're not always there asking them for money in that regard.
But that seems likely.
But we get the support we need when we need it, because we don't have to sing for our supper every night, mm-hmm. you know, to keep the budget going.
And the success is so visible, and the importance in terms of job creation, as you mentioned. The economic engine, it's self-explanatory.
It's self-explanatory, but we do have the opportunity and the need and the responsibility to explain it. And if there's a challenge going forward, it is helping the rest of North Carolina understand that this living laboratory can be eventful and impactful for them too. And it's not all about us, it's about them. And how do we transfer some of that tacit knowledge out into the other urban centers of North Carolina so they can benefit accordingly? If we fail to do that, we will ultimately not have the support we need here at home.
Sure. Well, some of the entities within the park are certainly following that. I think of the Biotechnology Center particularly, you know, has established satellite offices throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So there's a lot of that going on.
There is, and it's, no one, but unfortunately, the world's just never patient enough. Right. Almost all overnight successes are 20 years in the making, and it takes time to move these things forward. But I think we're making good progress, and there's more to be done.
Indeed. Well, the Research Triangle Foundation also, it seems to be following a new paradigm, if you will, a new business model, not just sellers of dirt anymore, as you put it earlier. It seems like you are focused more on some of the more intangible things moving forward, almost taking on a more importance in a public relations type of mode.
Well, we are. We look at it as kind of trying to find a need and fill it. You know, we don't want to do anything that is being well done by others.
Mm-hmm.
But where there's a gap or where there's an opportunity that we have a skill set or a competency that we can move into and do that, yeah, we are. So we're working to help organize and facilitate the development of the science communicators in the region. We think there's some great work being done there. And if we can help by resourcing that a little bit and helping convene those groups, we think that's wonderful.
Our friends at Science in the Triangle partner with, mm-hmm. we got to give them a shout out.
Yeah, they're really, they it's not above their pay grade. They do understand what they're doing, but we can help them. Mm-hmm. We can help them in that. And they serve a new role in helping to continue to extend our brand and make sure that the noise about the good things happening in science in North Carolina is on the web and in the world. And so we try to do those things. We're also working very hard to try to support collaboration among Raleigh and Durham and Chapel, all the communities and their chambers and their economic development efforts, to make sure they're aligned around the common good, if you will. And so we try to play a collaborative role there where we can. And like I say, anywhere we can add value, we'll step in and try to do that. I'm chairing this year the Regional Transportation Alliance, which is a business advocacy group on behalf of mobility mm-hmm. and transportation, mm-hmm. both air and highway and rail and transit. So we've got our toe in that water, and we're working hard to try to help make sure that the right solutions get advanced to make sure that this region maintains its prominence many, many years to come.
Absolutely. Well, Rick Weddle, it's been a great pleasure and certainly an honor to have you on Radio In Vivo today. And certainly hope you keep up the amazing work that you and the foundation are doing to keep Research Triangle Park at the forefront of the world's science parks.
Well, thanks for having me, Ernie. I'm glad to be here.
And we've got some great guests lined up in the coming weeks here on Radio In Vivo. You can check the website, radioinvivo.net, for our lineup of upcoming shows. And we are on Facebook, so we ask that you become a fan and stay up to date that way. And we want you to join us again next time for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Carrboro and Chapel Hill. And we will check you next time. Thanks.